Welcome, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. This is module 5 of the APR online study course. We're going to be talking tonight about, over and over again, you've heard me say this is the heart and soul of the APR. And frankly, I really think it is. This is the goal and the audiences and the objectives. So we're going to focus on that tonight. And I'm really happy that you're all here. We want you to participate. So please type into the chat window. If you don't see the chat window, click on attendee chat and just type into the chat window bubble at the lower left-hand side. What are the four components of a complete communication objective? This is really important. And Nadia says she can't hear us, but other people say you can hear us if you can hear us. Time frame, level of attainment, public, and outcome. That is fantastic. That is fantastic. So we may have just a little bit of a technical problem because I know there's a blizzard off in the eastern part of the United States, and it could be that the internet land webs are moving a little bit slower than they should be. But I'll tell you that all of this is recorded. So if you're having technical problems, you may need to come back and listen to the recording. RPIE, this particular session is about 33% of the questions on the APR examination. It's about focusing on well-defined audiences. It's about creating complete objectives based on the recommendations from the APR, which may be different than what you've heard from other places. Develop strategies to reach your audiences. So that's what we're focused on today. And I have a great panel with me today. Rachel Carvo. Rachel, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
We're really happy that you're here. And Rachel was here earlier. We also have with us Layla Rice. Layla, welcome.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Great. And actually, Layla, if we could, it would be great since Rachel was here before and she introduced herself to the group. It would be wonderful to spend a little bit of time sharing your passion for the APR, what the APR meant for you, and maybe a study tip or two.
Absolutely. My background wasn't originally in public relations. I came from the broadcasting and journalism side of things. So the APR for me was really more to establish more understanding, a stronger credibility in the public relations jobs and career that I had chosen to kind of pivot into. So it was really important for me to have the APR designation. And my path to the APR, some of you, you know, maybe on a little bit of a quicker path, I kind of took my time with it. I came into several cohorts. I sat through the initial cohort really just to get a feel for what was, you know, the process of becoming an APR and the various items, the questionnaire, the readiness review, the panel presentation, I should say, and also preparing for the test. So my initial, I sort of dipped a toe in with the initial cohort. I think I did maybe three cohorts before I finally took the APR exam.
That's great. That's great, Leila. Wonderful. And we actually have a question from the audience that I'm going to share right now, which pertains a little bit to what we talked about last week in terms of research. And Kyria, I'm going to ask you to click on the little microphone icon because we have some background sounds coming from your location. And the question is, as part of a communication plan, you realize that you don't have a baseline measurement, which speaks to the problem statement. Would you consider determining the baseline measurement as an objective? Nothing else can be accomplished without having some kind of baseline measurement. Or is it a tactic determining the baseline of a particular communication plan strategy? Do Rachel or Layla, do you want to try to care? Answer that one? It's a difficult question.
It is. You don't have a baseline to measure which speaks to the problem statement.
So what I think what the question is basically
saying is, I think that's
is,
part, I mean, wouldn't, that's really kind of, you know, part of the research. I don't know that that would be considered an objective.
So it would
because,
be part of
I
the
mean,
research itself.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, that's where I would see it. We would really need to have some sort of, because otherwise when you come, when, you know, through evaluation, you have nothing, you have no, nothing which to base your evaluation upon.
Right. Great. Excellent. Excellent feedback. Thank you so much. And so let's go ahead and carry on. We've got a lot to cover tonight. We have a panel presentation that we're going to have at the end, and we have some great notes. We do want to help you understand that we're at Module 5 right now. So this is really at the halfway point of your study. Some of you who are just starting out, frankly, I know you're drinking from a fire hose, and it may seem like too much. Relax, because you can join us again. Just as Layla pointed out, you can join us in another cohort. We're happy to have you return and participate that way. But we also want you to look at your progress. Go into the course, look at the green check marks of how much you've completed, and also look at your percentage complete. And if you need help finding all of that, I'm happy to help you with that. We also want you to reconsider taking the a KSA self-assessment, which is the your confidence level in all of the different KSA objectives. And that's really critically important. If you feel you're still not confident at all, feel free to just start over and start studying again until you feel like you're really there. Then the other thing that I really want to emphasize is the case problem activity, which is the one that we do in these modules 4, 5, and 6. Is a critically important activity because it will help you form the type of planning components that the examiners are going to look for on the APR examination. So it's really a milestone activity, and we really recommend that you do that activity before you consider yourself completed in the study. So we have a scenario practice question. We have two great volunteers who have volunteered, Curie and also April. And Curie, your question is up first. Let's go right to your question. Go ahead and take it away.
All righty. You are the communications manager at a small college, and recently your school was a victim of a number of IT security breaches. The IT department discovered that several unsuspecting administrative staff clicked on suspicious links, which enabled hackers to steal passwords and other private information. IT leaders asked your help to launch an anti-phishing campaign to arrest this immediate threat to campus security. What is the best objective that you can propose to combat this problem? Choose one. A. 80% of administrative staff will be aware of anti-phishing methods and will receive bi-monthly anti-phishing alert bulletins for 12 months. B, to increase awareness of cybersecurity threats by using all channels of communication to disseminate best practices, FAQs, and anti-phishing facts to 100% of administrative staff. C, to increase awareness of cybersecurity best practices by launching a campaign backed by research that uses weekly blogs, intranet postings, social media, and weekly touch base meetings with frontline staff. D, 80% of administrative staff will be able to identify suspicious links by the end of 4 months. E, to be a cybersecurity leader in the higher education field, prioritizing the protection of sensitive information by training of all frontline staff.
Good job. Good job. It's quite a little bit of a difficult question. We've got some disagreements here.
Yeah.
Good job on the question. And so let's see, according to Curie, it is D. And why don't you share your rationale, Curie?
Yes, the case KSA here is communication planning objectives, and the source is Strategic Planning for Public Relations by Ronald B. Smith on page 106. And the correct letter is D, attendee addresses the problem immediately with an audience, a time frame, and a measurable change in attitude or action. And it says, according to Smith, this focuses on an outcome objective. And the outcome objectives is the final level of objectives. So it takes aim at the change in expression and or conduct in the audience, providing the cognitive or behavioral component of the message. These objectives involve two types of actions: opinion, which is verbal action or attitude, and behavior, physical action. Outcome objectives, also called action objectives, may attempt to create new behaviors or change existing ones in the identified audience.
Okay, and let's get some feedback from our audience. And Rachel, do you want to share anything about this question, the sort of the format of the question or any context of the question?
I think this one might have been a tad long for what you'd see on the test. And I would also add that it's really important to look at that. Might use the wrong word. Look at the stem of the question. So what exactly it's asking. And then also a couple of these objectives had tactics in them. So it's really important to just remember that your objectives should be smart, and that you're everything's separate. So your objectives, your strategies, your tactics, and it's going to be really important to know the differences between all of those on your exam.
And Rachel, that's actually a really good point that I think a lot of candidates may not understand, and that is that the options that, I mean, Curie did a really good job of making a hard question, but she put tactics in there, which were distractors that were not correct. But what you're saying is all of the distractors should, if it says select the objective, all of the distractors in there should be objectives. Right?
At least what I remember from it is there were things that I could eliminate right away based on what the question was asking. So yeah, if it's asking for an objective, you just need to make sure that you know what makes up a good objective. And so yeah, there's a couple of these that you can pretty much rule out right away.
And Layla, maybe you can comment on this as well. The question really is, would you have a question that would say select the objective and then find in this you have some tactics that are in there?
I noticed in this in these particular responses, some of them have tactics, some of them also have some output objectives. If you look at A, there's an output objective of the bi-monthly anti-phishing alert bulletins for 12 months. So I think there was A comes close, but doesn't have the who, what, when, and by how much. Who, we have 80% of administrative staff. What will be, they'd be aware of anti-phishing methods, but we don't say by when and by, you know, we don't have the by when, so we can automatically rule out A. I think that there's when you look at your objectives and ensure that they are always, you know, they answer those questions of who, what, when, and how much, or as we say, the specific, measurable, attainable, the smart, the time specific, all of those, it's fairly easy to determine. But I think I agree with Rachel when in the test, the answers are all going to be very similar as far as looking as appearing to be objectives, and you really have to weed through to ensure that the objective is complete to find the correct answer.
Excellent. Great feedback. Let's go ahead and go to the next question, which is submitted by April. Go ahead, April.
Hey, you are the communications director for the local chapter of a national mentoring organization that matches adult mentors with children who are often from single-parent households, being raised by grandparents or in foster care. There aren't enough males stepping up to volunteer, so there's an extensive waiting list for boys in need of a mentor. It takes 6 months on average for a boy to be matched with an adult male mentor, nearly 10 times longer than a girl to be matched with an adult female mentor. Your organization is embarking on a PR campaign with a goal of ensuring every little boy is able to be matched with a mentor without being waitlisted. Which of the following may be objectives for your campaign? Select two. A, the number of servicemen from local military bases who sign up to become volunteers will increase by 25% over the next 12 months. B, raise awareness of the need for bilingual adult men aged 25 to 45 to become mentors. C, the number of boys waiting more than 21 days for a mentor is reduced by 75%. Or D, the number of local adult men aged 25 to 45 signing up to volunteer through the chapter website will increase by 30% within the next 6 months.
Okay, we've got lots of folks selecting, and of course, we do want to have two options here. And we want everyone to respond. We've got 50 some people in the meeting, and please do make a selection here. Okay. And there you have it. A and D. And April, would you share the rationale, please?
I will. And I'll note that if you're reading the rationale, C and D are off. That should be B and C down here. But the KSA is RPI Communications Planning Objectives. The source, there are two sources. Effective PR, Chapter 12, page 271, which states appropriate objectives contain four specific elements: target public, outcome, measurement, and target date, as well as the APR study guide, the four-step process, page 23, which states objectives should be SMART, specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-specific. Both option B and C lack target frames for the objectives. Option B lacks a specific measurement altogether.
Great. Excellent. Thank you so much. And Layla, why don't you go ahead and start some feedback on that question?
I think that easily when you looked at all of the options and you weighed those options as answers, you right away noticed that the two in the middle, B and C, were missing an element of our specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-specific. Some of them were missing a time specificity. Some of them were missing an amount of what we wanted to do by how much. So I think that those were very clear in response, and there were really no gray areas in selecting either of A. If you looked at those, then sometimes I think there could be some confusion that maybe with B and C, you could almost build those out to be perhaps goals. A little bit more, what is the future end result? But they were certainly not objectives.
Excellent. Rachel?
Yeah, I would pretty much agree with everything Layla said. Like the raise awareness of the need for bilingual males in the community, that to me says goal. So I think this was a good question, and it just reinforces what we said earlier about just knowing what is a solid objective.
Great. Excellent. Thank you so much. I think we have one more question, and I'm wondering if I can get April to read this question for us.
Sure. Five of the seven towns in your rural New England school district must vote to approve your district's budget at their annual town meetings. Last year, not a single parent attended town meetings in the town of Lisbon. Which objective would you include in your communication plan? A, inform Lisbon parents of the vital importance of supporting the school budget. B, register at least 25 Lisbon parents to vote. C, at least 35 Lisbon parents will attend the May 2018 annual town meeting. Or D, complete a mailing to all Lisbon parents explaining the school budget in 2016.
Okay, go ahead and enter your response. It looks like this is a little bit easy. Everybody's picking C. And that is the correct answer according to the author of the question. And then you can see the rationale there to having those four parts. So any comment? I mean, that was a fairly simple question. Any comment from either of you on that?
That's not likely going to be something you're going to see on the APR test. That was a little bit too easy. They do try to make you think a little bit more.
Great. Excellent. Good job. All right. And now we're going to go into notes for Module 5 with Taylor Maxey. And Taylor, are you with us?
I am.
Excellent. Really good. And we're going to look at Taylor's highlights. And remember that this is the process of reading and looking for highlights, sort of in a global perspective, and then sharing them with the group. So, Taylor, with that, why don't you go ahead and share your notes?
Thanks so much, Michael. Good evening, fellow classmates. Like he said, I am Taylor Maxey. I am the press secretary for the Florida Housing Finance Corporation, and it is a pleasure to present my notes for tonight's class. Last week, our classmate did an absolutely wonderful job with all of her notes and many terms that she was able to go over with us. So for tonight, due to time and not sounding too much like a broken record, I'm going to go over a brief list of our definitions, and then we'll move right into the rest of our notes. So with a few of our notes, let's start with a problem statement, which is a brief summary of the current situation. It's usually it is present tense and does not place blame. A goal is a statement that spells out the overall outcome of a program. And I would think that an example of a goal would be to brand the art festival in the North Florida area as the premier art festival for the state of Florida. An objective is our measurable results that represent specific knowledge, opinion, behavioral outcomes that are achieved. Practitioners usually use the acronym SMART, and we've heard it a lot tonight, and we'll sure hear it again some more. And I would think that an example of an objective for us would be along the same lines of the art festival would be to increase attendance to the art festival with art buyers in the Big Bend area by 15% by April 2018. Another definition is publics, which are people or groups of people who are somehow mutually involved or interdependent with particular organizations. Examples of publics, of course, would be community partners like art museums and art galleries, their particular members, art buyers, young professionals, et cetera. And of course, the strategy is the overall approach or plan to achieve the objective. I would also like to, again, refer our classmates to go back to their study guide and to our textbook to see the additional terms in our textbook that deal with a lot of the definitions tonight. So strategic planning involves making decisions about program goals and objectives, identifying key publics, setting policies and rules, and determining strategies. Before developing strategies, selecting your key publics is key. Selecting your target publics is key. As mentioned in the first slide, publics are people or groups of people who are somehow mutually involved or interdependent with particular organization, pretty much people with common interests. PR scholar James Grunick developed situational theory of publics using four labeled publics. Non-publics are those who have no connection or interest in an issue. Latent publics, those who are unaware of their connections to others or an organization as it pertains to an issue. Aware publics, those who recognize that they are affected or involved but have not communicated with others about it. And active publics are those who begin to communicate and organize to do something about the issue. Grunick also created four types of publics, and they are all issues publics, which are active on all issues. Apathetic publics are inattentive or inactive on all issues. Single issue publics are active on one or a limited number of issues. And hot issue publics who are active only after the media exposes the issue. These are the four elements that make up a public opinion. Opinions, attitudes, beliefs, and values. Opinions are responses or statements concerning issues and are changeable. Attitudes convert dispositions governing likes and dislikes, can be measured by asking questions, are subjective, enduring versus changeable, and inferred through indirect questions about feelings versus thinking. Beliefs are assumptions people live by, difficult to explain, and are building blocks of attitudes and opinions. And values are explicit standards for evaluating right or wrong, desirable or undesirable. They determine what people think are important in life, covert like opinions, and difficult to explain. There are 8 approaches to defining publics. It can be done geographically, demographically, psychographic, which is the lifestyle and psychological characteristics, covert power, which is those holding behind the scenes political or economic power, position reputation, membership affiliation, role in decision-making process, which are those who are active participants in decision-making process situations, and communication behavior. I believe this also ties into audience segmentation, which is the breakdown of an audience into demographic, psychographic, and other dimensions. As it pertains to components of a program's objective, as mentioned earlier, SMART is the acronym that is usually used. It stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time specific. When writing an objective, you want to target a public, specify outcomes to be achieved, have measurement, which is tell what will happen, how much, and when, and set a target date for achieving the outcome. As we know, outcomes are measurable results of change in action, attitude, awareness, behavior, opinion, or support. And when writing objectives, there are 3 outcome categories. What are people aware of, which is a knowledge outcome, how people feel, belief outcomes, and what people do, behavioral outcomes. There are also output objectives. They measure activities and help monitor work, but have no direct value in measuring effectiveness of a campaign. And there's also process objectives that call to inform or educate publics. The sequence behind most PR programs is information gain, leading to opinion change and ultimately behavioral change. Important tips to remember is behavioral change only happens when there is an opinion supporting in favor of desired behavior. And opinion change happens when appropriate information support or knowledge is gained. This concludes my slides for tonight. I would like to again refer my fellow classmates to the readings in your textbook and in our study guide, and also really hone in on the messaging because that was great information as well. Thank you.
Excellent job. And you see the raining thumbs up and clapping going across the screen. That's so fantastic. Wonderful job. I think, Rachel, that she did a good job with those notes. Are there anything that sort of jumped out at you as something that you really think people should hang on to when they listen to that?
This makes me think of when I was going through this and trying to figure out exactly how I was going to put my panel presentation together. And this was actually the time that I did notes, and I honestly, the first time I went through it, I kind of struggled with it. So I thought this was very well done, and it, and like you said, going through those readings is really important. And I'm glad that I did those notes when I was going through it, because it made me get out of my comfort zone, because this was not an area that I was that great at that point. So this right here really makes up your panel presentation. It makes up so much of the test. So I spent so much time with this. And I also took the long route getting my APR. And I just really wanted to make sure that I had this part down, because it helps me now. I still use it now when I'm trying to figure out what audience I'm writing for, how I should be writing, what strategy I should be doing. So it is, it's really important. And I think you did a good job of capturing all of that in your notes.
Excellent. Layla?
Yes, great job, Taylor. I would say largely, as Rachel had said, these notes are important to, I wrote notes while I was going through my initial cohorts. I do, you know, we did reading. I relied on EPR, strategies and tactics, and also the AP style guide when we got into some of, there was some good information there. But also as I got closer to the exam, I once again took more notes because initially when you're beginning your study, you're focusing on several different things. You're focusing on the readiness review, you're focusing, or your panel presentation, you're focusing on the questionnaire, and that's very paramount. So sometimes, as Michael said earlier, you're drinking from a fire hose, so keep the notes. And one of the other things I found was that I also relied on the notes from the cohorts. I went back and I studied notes from all of the various cohorts and combined them with my own. But for me, the old school way of having a pen in hand and jotting things down and referring back to it and creating the Quizlet cards, all of those things helped. Some of these, as we went through, as Taylor's notes were very thorough, the specificity with the various types of objectives and things like that, those come in handy now when someone from the C-suite says, hey, we need to do this. So you want to come back and say, well, who's our audience? Who is this going? You know, you have a little bit more background to be able to push back and say, we're not just going to go after the most recent new shiny object. Let's have some objectivity to why we need to do this. What's it going to do? How's it going to move the meter? So having this information is nice to have in your back pocket.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that feedback. That's wonderful. And we are going to move on now to the case problem presentation. And we have Mary Ann Bird. And I have to tell you, I'm an old guy, and I should have put PP, not RR. And it's just because, you know, it was drilled into me that it's the readiness review, but it's not. It's the panel presentation, and I wish they hadn't changed it, frankly, but there you go. So Mary Ann is going to be sharing with you her panel presentation. Now, the facilitators are going to listen, but frankly, they know how to give feedback. What I want to do is really challenge all of you who are studying to think about Mary Ann's panel presentation and imagine that she is showing it to you and asking you for your advice. And again, the text chat window is a great place to put that advice throughout this presentation. When you see the goal, do you think this is a solid goal? If not, share some comments. When you see the audiences that were selected, share some feedback. When you see the objective, when you see the strategy, when you see how the components all work together, share feedback. So that's a wonderful way to learn, because our reflective ability actually puts us into a different brain set than it does when we're trying to create it in the first place. So think about what you would say to Mary Ann when she's sharing. And Mary Ann, I hope after that introduction that you're still willing to share your your panel presentation.
Absolutely. Do I have control of the slides, Michael? Let's see how to advance them.
You got them. Just put your mouse towards the bottom of the screen and you see the arrows. And you can also use the arrow pointing to the right on your computer keyboard as well.
Okay, I sure do. Good evening, everyone. My name is Mary Ann Bird, and I'm currently the communications director for the Kershaw County School District in Camden, South Carolina. We have 20 schools in kindergarten through 12th grade located in the middle of the state of South Carolina. Our geographic size is basically the size of Rhode Island. We're mostly rural, 10,500 students and about 1,000 employees. Our student population is majority white, more than a little quarter percent black, and our next largest population is Hispanic. Most of our English as second language speakers are Hispanic, and we've seen a 33% increase in the last 2 years in our ESOL students, so that population is on the rise for us. Basically, 6 out of every 10 students are on free and reduced lunch. And in general, our funding is in the bottom one-third of the state, but our achievement generally tops the top one-third. In the school business, a lot of people have often said to me, what do you do in the summertime? There's no students there. That must be a piece of cake. And that's actually not the case, because that's our busiest time as we get ready for the new school year. Just imagine if you were in the business world and you closed down your operations for 2.5 months. You lost a percentage of your raw materials, your product, and your labor force. And then you needed to get ready to have similar, but not identical, raw materials and product and labor force come back to you. And throw in the fact that you're not really sure which plants would actually receive these raw materials until the day you start up your operations again. That may be oversimplified, but that's the challenge of student populations from year to year. We do use a formula with live births and a few other factors, but we've also seen unexpected bubbles over the years where more or less students arrive in one school site than another. Sometimes you can go back and look at a specific incident like an ice storm or a hurricane to explain an increase, as funny as that is. But other times we're not sure why our estimates might not have been accurate. So let me lay out the situation analysis. Every year, the Kershaw County School District, or KCSD, holds a special day-long event in July where parents are asked to visit their students' schools to complete registration paperwork, prove residency, and pay applicable fees for the new school year that starts in August. This is a way to count heads, and it encourages our families who may still be in vacation mode, especially if they've moved from up north where school does not start as early as we do in the south, to go ahead and let us know that their students will be attending for the new school year. This is for both new and returning students. Over the past few years, KCSD has moved from not having any of the required forms available in advance to posting those forms in English version in PDF format on our website so they could be completed, printed out, and brought into school on registration day. Although KCSD has information about students' count from the previous school year and uses a relatively reliable formula to determine the number of kindergarten students, the special event known as Registration Day helps us to get a better picture for our need to hire teachers. The information, however, has to be transferred from the school level to the district level, which is actually the ones that have the responsibility for hiring. And in the past, principals have been known to pad their student counts to meet maximum district class size requirements so that additional teachers will be hired to lower student-teacher ratios. Once a teacher is under contract, the school district estimates that's about a $60,000 per year commitment. So this leads into a problem statement. KCSD is unable to adequately staff its schools, thus delaying hiring decisions and disrupting the start of the school year. In the school business, the quality of the pool of applicants decreases the closer you get to the first day of school. And in South Carolina, as well as some other states, we're facing a serious teacher shortage as our universities are not producing enough graduates needed to fill slots for baby boomer retirees, as well as to fill and replace a number who leave the profession in the early part of our careers. After developing the problem statement, I conducted research and I had several questions that I wanted to have answers to that could be separated into three different categories: operations, customer service, and best practices. In the field of operations, I wanted to know why the current process was not producing timely results, so I used in-depth interviews, which were informal, primary, qualitative, and formative, with both school and district-level administrators, and I also reviewed the data and records that were on file. That's the same kind of research, although it's quantitative and not qualitative. Also, I wanted to know what methods would be most appealing to families as kind of a customer service question. I used parent cabinet meetings. That's a group that we have that has one representative from each of our schools and meets quarterly with both the superintendent and with me. And again, that's informal, primary, qualitative, informative. And after having studied RPI, if I were doing this research again, I would propose using an online survey to gather more data from this parent audience to bring in more quantitative research. The third question I had was, how do other school districts handle the same process, kind of a best practice question? So I conducted interviews with other South Carolina school districts, and I reviewed information and case studies from other school districts in and outside of our state which was informal, primary, qualitative, and formative. What were the results? In operations, our district administrators reported a concern with having to rely on the schools for information. Hiring is a district function, but the schools had the control. Our district administrators also were hesitant about the cost of implementing a new system. School administrators reported frustration with inconsistencies among school reporting and looking out for their own staffing and a lack of district control. The record review showed that 75% of our students had registered by registration day. And the records also showed that we hired 2 to 4 teachers and also moved an additional 3 to 5 teachers each school year after the first 10 days of school for the past 5 years. Customer service results showed that parents reported frustration in having to miss work time to complete registration as it took 30 to 45 minutes per school site. And they also expressed an interest in being able to complete the forms online, especially with a feature to carry common information from one of their child's forms to another. In terms of best practice, discussions with other districts showed that web-based online registration programs were increasing in use. And the literature showed that school systems really could benefit in their data collection quality and in their labor savings with online registration, as well as providing satisfaction for the families. SWOT analysis was conducted, and that determined the school district's strengths and weaknesses, as well as opportunities and threats. As a strength, the school district was the first to implement a one-to-one laptop initiative for high school students in our state back in the mid-2000s, and it likes to think of itself as progressive with technology. However, as a weakness, much of our county is very rural with limited internet connectivity outside of our school campuses. We also have a rather lean district office staff, and that meant there were limited staff resources to devote to a new project. But we did realize the opportunity that we had to improve our first impression with families, both new and returning, with our registration process, as well as to improve our student enrollment data collection. Possible use of this online system would line up well with our desire to be seen as a leader in technology. As a threat, though, we knew we had to combat the potential that families wouldn't respond to messages in a timely manner, as well as a possible resistance of our school administrators who had control of the student count information. For key audiences, I identified 4 primary audiences. Our first was the school administrators. They are the frontline interaction with families and were the actual collection data point for student enrollment. Secondly, our district administrators group. They're critical in the budget approval and hiring process. A third group were parents and families are the ones who actually hold the information we're trying to collect. And our fourth primary audience was our school board, who approves the district's budget and staff hires. All this in mind, I developed a goal. KCSD's district-level online registration program will provide real-time information and be easy to use for parents. This will ensure right-sized staffing that really will benefit our students' learning experiences. Sorry, my technology. There we go. So now to my objectives. I developed objectives for all those audiences, but I'm just going to share the ones for my parent group tonight. All of these objectives are outcome-based, and the last one is the strongest of those. By July 1st of 2015, 50% of our parents surveyed would have an awareness of our online registration process. This was actually proposed. I didn't actually do this, but if I were to go through the process again after shutting RPI, I would. And I would collect this data through an online survey. By July the 28th of that same year, which is one day prior to registration, 50% will have completed the online registration process for their students. And on registration day itself, which is July 29th of 2015, 80% of parents will complete online registration and pay the fees. And then finally, on registration day, 75% of our parents surveyed will report satisfaction with registration process. Again, this is proposed, but we did have one of our sites that used an exit poll at their school site, and I would propose doing that across our district. Key messages were the same for all of our audiences, and they included that new registration process was in place, also the online process was easy to do, and that completing the actual online process before registration day would save significant time at our school. Persons could take care of the process when they came to school, but getting it done in advance would save them time there on the school site. I inserted a slide here to talk about diffusion theories as it related to this campaign because they were very important. As we've studied in our cohort before about diffusion theories, Rogers' innovation decision process theory has five distinct stages, and that includes awareness, interest, evaluation, trial, and adoption. In this campaign, in our situation, families needed knowledge, and they needed to be persuaded of the merits of online registration. They had to decide to participate, they had to act, and then they had to confirm that they made the right decision. Rogers' individual innovative theory suggests that individuals react differently to change based on a stable trait or predisposition, and we know from our study that those group include innovators, early adopters, the early majority, late majority, and laggards. We used a soft opening where we had school administrators identify families that they knew were innovators and early adopters of technology, and we opened up the system to them and registered their children prior to the opening of the system to all parents, and this also helped with our staff training. We also use social media and traditional media to reinforce adoption with the early majority and some late majority of parents after we opened up the online registration system to all families. Strategies and tactics, again, I did for all of the audiences, but tonight I'm just showing you the parent awareness strategy. And that was to build alliances with parents to provide information about the online registration process from a variety of sources. It was one of my personal guiding factors throughout this whole process that I didn't want a parent to tell me or to tell the superintendent that he or she didn't know about the change. I knew that persons would have concerns or complaints perhaps about having to use technology, but I didn't want anybody to say they had a lack of knowledge about our new system. So some of the tactics that we used under this strategy for parent awareness was customized emails with snap codes. Snap code is an individual ID number that's generated by the system, and it's unique for each student, and you have to have a snap code in order to start the process. So we communicated that to parents via email as well as via U.S. mail. Same information, just two different ways. We also had news releases and district and school website postings. More tactics included the use of social media, our Facebook and Twitter that we used, and we also developed a how-to YouTube video where parents would actually see what the screen looked like when they would go online, and we walked them through how to use each of the various screens. We used our automated messaging system. Our vendor is Blackboard. That gives us phone, email, and text messages we can send directly to our families and to our employees. We used our electronic flyer system. It's called Peach Jar, and that's where a PDF flyer is sent directly into the emails of our families, again, families and employees, as opposed to having to retrieve it from the back a student's backpack. So that's been a great advancement for us, getting information straight into our families' email accounts. And then we also had on-site computers available for family use for 2 weeks prior to registration day, where families could come into the school to complete the process if they didn't have internet at home or at work to do so. Our timeline included initial approval from the superintendent. We started that in the fall of 2014, and our registration day was actually July 29th of 2015. The campaign lasted approximately 14 months from research to evaluation. Research phase took 2 months, while planning stage lasted 4 months. Once the campaign was presented and approved, implementation took 6 months, and the evaluation was done in 2 months. The budget was just under $67,000. And that included staff time, paying for the online registration system, printing, postage, and video production. In terms of evaluation, I went back to interviewing the same key publics who might engaged at the beginning of the process after registration day was over. I held informal interviews with school and district administrators to collect their input on the new online process, including its strengths and weaknesses. That was informal, primary, qualitative, and evaluative instead of formative as it was in the research stage. Our district and school administrators expressed satisfaction and noted positive changes such as shorter wait lines and minimal paperwork, and administrators saw this process as moving our district forward with technology. I also gathered input again from parents at the parent cabinet meeting and through social media posts, and that was informal, primary, qualitative, and evaluative. Families expressed satisfaction with the ease of use and streamlined process. Families with more than one student expressed appreciation for common information that was transferred between students without having to be retyped. We did have some confusion over a certain question with a student meal number, and the need for Spanish translation was really noted as needed as one of the improvements we had to do going forward. Again, one of our student school attendance clerks conducted a short video exit poll with parents who indicated they were pleased with the process, and after having studied RPI, I would develop in-depth interviews for families to provide additional qualitative research and an online survey to obtain additional quantitative data. Here are some of the quantitative results from our campaign. These are all formal, primary, quantitative, and evaluative. On the first day we opened up the site, 12% of our students were registered. And the day prior to registration day, over 45% registered. Our objective was to have 50% registered the day before. So we were close and we felt good about this progress. The day after registration, over 80% of our students were registered. And our objective was to have 75% registered. So we exceeded our goal. Our objective. By the first day of school, over 11,000 registrations were processed. And since we only have 10,500 students, obviously we had some duplicate registrations. But it does show that all of our students use the online process as opposed to using any kind of paper copies, which some of our neighboring school districts do allow. But our biggest result was that we didn't have to have any additional hiring or movement of teachers after the first day of school for the 2015-16 school year. We felt really good about that. And one of the other objectives I have for district administrators, I didn't show y'all tonight, but it has a piece in there about accurate reporting from 100% of our schools. So no movement is a better learning experience for our students as well as helps to improve staff morale. Feedback from our employees was really fantastic. The next two slides show the positive feedback, particularly from principals and school level employees who were involved in the on-site registration process. As a district level staffer, it's really nice when you have people in the schools satisfied with the work that you're doing. This is an email that went from a school registrar to our superintendent to sum up what she was experiencing on site on registration day, and then his response back to recognize our team's efforts. And in his response, he gives credit to us, which is always great to see. The two screen captures were from the video exit polls that I had told you earlier about one of our school sites doing. And then this slide shows feedback from our community. This was a Facebook post from the school district itself. And in there, you can see families who were responding to us about the satisfaction and the experience that they had with their experience. And this is a great example of Grunig's two-way symmetrical model, where through the model, the organization attempts to create a mutually beneficial situation. So overall, reflections and next steps. We did determine that the campaign was successful. In the second year, we moved our kindergarten roundup, which is our spring registration for kindergartners, to an online process and added Spanish translation, which we made sure we had enough time to put in place. One of the ways we really felt like we'd been successful increasing parental awareness and involvement was in the second year, parents started calling us and sending us messages asking for their SNAP codes. They were already using the terminology and the lingo right off the bat, and we felt really good about that, that we had helped with their awareness and knowledge of the system. And moving forward, we'll have to decide if we're going to use the system completely for residency documents to be uploaded and perhaps even do away with the in-person site visit, but that's still to be determined for us. So this concludes my case study presentation for tonight, and thank you.
Excellent job. I mean, Marianne, there are people in the chat window that are raised, and I'll try to make sure I send you the chat comments, but basically, people are saying, oh, my God, I see Marianne's presentation. And I go, oh, I thought I had a good panel presentation, but hey, maybe not. So let's get some feedback from our panel. And Rachel, do you want to go first and share just some feedback for Marianne?
Yeah, this was really good. I really liked at the end of your evaluation that you actually had, the Facebook posts and the emails. I think that really adds credibility to what you were saying. So those are good concrete examples that you have. And then I overall thought it was really good. Your objectives were good. Your goal was really good. strategies and tactics were really good. It was, and you had a lot of good research beforehand, which when I was doing mine, I actually had to do some of, okay, if I could do this over again, this is what I would do, because I didn't have a lot of research.
So, right.
I think this was a really, it was really good. I'm, wow.
Do you want to be on my panel presentation?
Great job. Great job. Excellent. Layla?
I was going through and I thought your problem statement was great based on the situational analysis you had conducted, which was very thorough. Your problem statement didn't place cause or blame. It simply was a statement of the problem and didn't, you know, lean one way or the other. I thought that throughout your presentation, which is good, and you're ready for that, you know, you'll be ready for your panel presentation, you constantly would implement, you know, you would say, this is what I would do, knowing you, because you, great addition of how you would supplement your research, for example, when you were going through that, or how you would change your evaluation or change processes. I thought that adding that throughout the presentation was spot on and is fully expected. You had a very good understanding and prioritization of your publics. I would say, just from a definition standpoint, you would probably be speaking more about publics, because your audience is just a group of listeners who may receive your message, but otherwise really don't have a common connection with one another. And that's just within APR, you know, studying for your APR, you'll want to make sure you identify publics and audience and make sure you have that. I thought that the goal statement was a very solid statement of being. I think you did a really great job.
Thank you.
Excellent. We did have a question also from the audience, a couple of questions. And remember, you folks, you can click on the little sort of chat bubble icon at the top of the screen, and you can submit your questions for the panel as well. Is this a good example of what a panel presentation should be? And I think it's kind of good for us to mention that some panel presentations, some panels will say, do not use technology. There are some panels that will say, just bring your questionnaire, bring your communication plan, and talk to us, meaning that they might even interrupt you. Rachel, do you want to back me up on that? I don't know what your situation was like when you presented.
Yeah, so Nebraska does not use any technology. So I went really old school. I had three ring binders. So I had my questionnaire and my communications plan, had a nice little cover page. I even put the page protector so that they could easily flip pages. And then I also included a notepad and pen in each one so that they had something to take notes on as they went, in addition to their scoring sheets if they wanted to use it. Mine was a lot like a conversation, and they did ask me questions throughout, and they asked me quite a few questions before I even started my presenting my plan. So just be ready for that. And it depends on your panel too, and it obviously depends on state to state how they do it. But yeah, I think it's important to check with your, you know, if you're in PRSA, if you're in a state chapter, you have a chair that you can reach out to. I felt like I was bugging my chair with questions. but yeah, that was one thing I learned, was no technology, set aside 3 to 4 hours. And I was like, 3 to 4 hours, that's a long time. But by the time I actually walked out of there, it was a full 3 hours. Just be prepared for that.
Excellent. Layla, did you include some swag in your three ring binders as well?
My swag, I had, I did stay low tech. I did a three ring binder, and within that, again, the questionnaire. And what I did was, I, you know, from a delivery standpoint, I prepared it as a PowerPoint, but I did it in a vertical so that it flipped as a book. And then I divided it, and I divided it based on research, implement, you know, planning, the whole RPI. Mm-hmm. And then I supplemented that with
some items that we had produced as part of the actual communications plan that I developed. I actually did the old-fashioned three-panel like science fair board with some of the coverage we'd received, some of the artwork we had developed, and then, as with this presentation, some of the Facebook posts and things like that you could actually include, and I included a lot of that. But as Rachel said, mine started out, if your panel will try to get you to relax a little bit, and they'll have some conversation with you. Mine started with them. We basically spent about 30 minutes talking about my path, how I got to determine that this was the path I wanted to take and move into public relations and become accredited. And they were it was very much a conversation. It was not me standing there presenting. There was back and forth. They would ask questions. They would ask for additional information. And I noticed I was looking at some of the, some of the questions in the chat, and a few people had said, well, I don't remember who it was, forgive me, but someone said I did more of the media relations side. Don't let that intimidate you. You can still make your panel presentation and explain that this was the part I played. It's more important that you know all of the parts. You may not have been able to implement all of them yourself, mm-hmm. but it's important that you know how to, and you show them that.
Excellent. Great feedback. Wonderful panel. Wonderful notes, wonderful panel presentation. Great job. We are getting to the end of our time. You can see that we've got another case that we're going to have. Actually, I think it's going to be another panel presentation next week. Casey is there. David is also going to be sharing a question with us. And we have Sydney Warner and Amira Palacios is going to be our APR facilitator. So thank you all for being with us this week. Remember, this is the midpoint. So take sort of an assessment of where you are. This is the middle of our spring session. Think about retaking the KSA self-assessment, because that really is the key, because that is what the test is the KSAs. Check your percent complete in the online course. When you get to 75% and you do those milestone activities, we want to talk to you, because you're getting close to be taking the examination. And remember, you can also relax and just join the next study group. Thank you all for being with us. Please throw some thumbs up for our great panel, Rachel and Layla, and also for Marianne and for Taylor and for April and Curie, and this wonderful group tonight. We'll see you all next week. Thank you very much, folks. Bye-bye.